Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Tuesday, April 19th. As the world watches the gruesome campaign of war crimes unfold in Eastern Europe, let's not miss what might be about to happen in Western Europe. This coming Sunday, far-right leader Marine Le Pen could be elected the president of France. Downgrading France's role in NATO and tilting more toward Russia during this war could be just two of the extreme ramifications if she wins. Others, according to New York Times Paris bureau chief Roger Cohen, could include relegating climate issues to a low priority, banning the wearing of headscarves by Muslim women in public, and more. Now, there hasn't been much coverage of the French presidential campaign in this country, I guess because of other pressing issues to pay attention to, like Ukraine and crime and COVID and inflation. But the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, of course, and Le Pen came in first and second in the first round of the election, separated by just 4.5 points, and they are now in the home stretch of the runoff campaign toward this weekend. New York Times Paris bureau chief Roger Cohen joins us now live from over there. Roger, thanks so much for some time for our U.S. audience today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian.
I'll ask you, of course, why this race is close and how close it appears to be. But first, I'd like to ask you to describe for our listeners some of Le Pen's positions. You use the label far right for Marine Le Pen. So in general, and then we'll go down some specifics. In general, how far right is she?
Well, she's attempted a milquetoast makeover during this campaign. But if you look at her program, she's still pretty far to the right. She's an anti-immigrant candidate, and that has been the position of her national rally, formerly National Front Party, for a long time. She wants to ban the use of the headscarf in public if she's elected. She wants to rewrite the French Constitution through a referendum in a way that would make it impossible for France to accept a number of foreigners that was deemed to be changing the essential character of France. She's generally to the right on most issues. She's been a firm supporter for many years of President Vladimir Putin in Russia for his stand, as she sees it, on behalf of nation, religion, family, and so on.
So on the question of Ukraine, as most of Europe debates whether to label Putin's war a genocide or merely horrific war crimes, Le Pen said she would seek a, quote, strategic rapprochement, or reconciliation in English, I guess, with Russia. What would that include, according to Le Pen's campaign?
Well, Le Pen, as I said, has been a firm supporter of President Putin. When he annexed Crimea in 2014, she approved that. She said that it was a coup d'etat in Ukraine that had precipitated these events, and that President Putin had been entirely justified in doing that, as in provoking the conflict in the eastern Donbass region. Since the war in Ukraine, to be fair to Madame Le Pen, she has for the first time ever criticized Russia, saying that a red line was crossed with this invasion. So she has adjusted her position some. She's scrambled, if you like, to try to put the degree of her attachment to Mr. Putin behind her. But she would pose a very big problem, I think, to President Biden, in the sense that he has tried to, and very successfully has formed, a united allied front to try to save Ukraine and defeat Russia. If elected, France would become, if Ms. Le Pen is elected, France would in effect become the soft underbelly of the West, and that alliance would fracture.
And she said she would respect NATO's Article 5, which says if one NATO member is attacked, they'd consider all of NATO attacked, but would not put French troops under a unified NATO command. Could that be an important distinction in practice or just on paper?
Well, I think to withdraw from the integrated military command of NATO at a time of war in Europe, when a Russian president has alluded to the possible use of nuclear weapons, it may be a technical change, but it's symbolic and it's highly disruptive. And on the question of rapprochement with Russia, I was at a press conference when she talked about this the other day. And she said, well, once peace is established in Ukraine and then a peace agreement is signed, I'm going to try and engineer this reconciliation with Russia, as if all the crimes, the war crimes that we have witnessed in Mariupol, in Bucha, and so on, would just pass under the carpet overnight, peace would be made, and some kind of reconciliation with Russia would be engineered by Ms. Le Pen. To say the least, it's far-fetched and troubling.
And I seem to recall Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump all tried to have rapprochements with Russia after the Cold War.
You have a good memory, Brian.
And we see how those worked out.
Wasn't it called a reset with President Obama?
Obama called it a reset.
As for Donald
Bush
Trump,
said he looked into Putin's eyes and saw he has a good soul. It was something like that.
Correct. And President Trump didn't even have to gaze into President Putin's eyes. He just decided, for whatever reason, that he would never, ever, ever criticize a single thing that President Putin said. He did impose sanctions on Russia, but when it came to Mr. Putin's actions, from meddling in the 2016 election to flattening Aleppo in Syria, to all that he did in Ukraine with the annexation of Crimea and instigating this war in the Donbass, President Trump really had nothing to say.
Well, they say Trump didn't just like Putin. He wanted to be like Putin in domestic policy, at least. But that's another show. So, Roger, let's go down some of these other issues. On relegating climate to a lower priority, if Le Pen gets in, the global climate strategy, now in effect, is known as the Paris Climate Accord. I guess that could become an ironic joke. What would downgrade in climate policy in France, Le Pen style, look like?
Well, it's not really clear, Brian. She's all about French national grandeur, French sovereignty, French diplomatic presence on the world stage. She said at this news conference the other day, there is no France without grandeur. And in her scheme of things, climate rates some way down the list. She's dismissed wind turbines, for example, of which there are many thousand in France, as a scam, and has said that she will dismantle them. I doubt that that would ever happen, but she's a big advocate of French nuclear power generation. Nuclear power stations do account for the bulk of French electricity generation. But in terms of...
Although whatever people think about nuclear power, and of course that's always a matter of debate, it is climate friendly, right?
It is, yeah. That is correct. But in terms of developing alternative green post-carbon economy environmental measures, she's negative. I mean, she just thinks it doesn't really matter, or it's not the crisis that much of the world considers it to be.
And your latest article's headline says, as final vote nears in France, a debate over Islam and headscarves. That sounds like such a George Bush-era headline, you know, war on terror-era headline. In what way are they still debating headscarves in France?
Well, they can never quite get away from it, Brian. And You know, full face covering is already not permitted here in France, and any kind of ostentatious religious symbol, and a headscarf is considered one, is not allowed in schools and cannot be worn by les fonctionnaires, the army of civil servants, while they're performing their duties. Madame Le Pen wants to take this even further. She wants to extend the headscarf ban to anywhere in public. She said she will fine anybody who wears a headscarf in the same way as people driving without seatbelts are fined. Now, whether this would apply to a headscarf as a fashion statement a la Audrey Hepburn is unclear, but it would be a pretty extraordinary step to try to do that. She's maybe tried to row it back a little, saying the parliament would have to vote on it in the last day or two. But she says, President Macron countered by saying, well, if you do that, because the Constitution guarantees equality of treatment for all believers or non-believers in France, you would have to ban the kippa, you would have to ban a cross in use of these in public. To which she countered, no, it's not a religious symbol, the headscarf. It is the symbol of Islamism, a militant, extreme Islamic expression of Islam. So she's trying to argue that it's really it's pretty grotesque. She's trying to argue that it's,
I mean, we can just fact check and say that that's false,
symbol,
right?
Pardon?
Can we just fact check and say that that's false?
Yeah, I think we can. Yeah.
What about?
I mean, I would say definitely yes.
Yes, that not every Muslim woman who wears a headscarf is making a radical Islamist statement by doing so, and probably the vast majority are not. Adam in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Adam, thanks for calling today.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to say first that I'm a big fan of the show and of Roger's work, that Le Pen really represents a rejection of the left and the right elites. All of these leaders in France, whether they come from the socialists or from the right-wing parties, they all have traditionally come from the same schools, and there's a kind of groupthink among this elite leadership that has failed to solve the problems of France. And I think people are looking to people like Le Pen as less even what she's specifically saying, and mostly because she's rejecting the Macrons and the Hollands and all of these leaders.
And Adam, do I understand from our screener that you are a French citizen?
Yes, I'm a French citizen, and I voted in the first round, and will vote this Saturday.
Do you want to say for who?
I will vote for Macron.
Thank you very much. What do you think about his analysis, Roger?
Well, first of all, I'm shocked that Adam's going to vote for Macron. I think his analysis is very good. Macron and his predecessor, François Hollande, both went to this elite school, the École Normale d'Administration, ENA, where a ridiculously high proportion of French presidents go. And again, as in many Western societies, there's a fairly widespread rejection outside the metropoles, outside the big connected cities, by people who feel left behind, of these elites who've been able to manage successfully the modern tech-driven world, whereas they have not. They have faced problems getting to the end of the month. They have faced problems finding doctors in the regions where they live, finding even train stations in the regions where they live. And some of that led, of course, to the big yellow vest protests beginning in late 2018 that Mr. Macron was finally able to bring to an end by coming down from Jupiter, where there was a popular theory that he was behaving in a Jupiterian way, like the king of the gods when he first took office, and he finally started listening to people. So yes, there is. It's interesting that Le Pen's support, if you look at it, the people who are more than 10 kilometers from a train station in the countryside vote overwhelmingly for Le Pen. And the further from one they are, the more that number goes up. So yes, it's a feeling of alienation, not feeling confident about their children's futures, worried economically, and just existentially troubled, and wanting, you know, feeling prepared to roll the dice, to hell with everything, as with Brexit, as with often with no illusions. I mean, Ms. Le Pen's been around for a long time. Yeah. And with we will see.
And as with some people who voted for Trump, at least the first time. Adam, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Let's go to another French citizen here in New York who says she'll be voting this weekend. Cecile in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Cecile, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Good morning. And yes, I will be voting on Saturday. I will also be voting Macron. I assume that there's going to be an overwhelming support for Macron outside of France. It seems that all us expats, we're all voting Macron because we care about, you know, the image of France, and we can't fathom that extreme right leader might be leading France. That being said, I think one of the factors, you know, that really explain why we are in this situation, and this is not the first time that Le Pen, either Marine or her father, has been in the second round, but the other times there was, you know, everybody was saying, okay, we cannot have a extreme right leader, so everybody's going to be voting for Chirac or Hollande or Macron or anybody else but Le Pen. It's different this time around because what Macron did by creating this center new party that isn't really left or right, but is very liberal and very new and very young, is that this has precipitated the collapse of the traditional left and the traditional right. And a lot of people have not understood what Macron was trying to do, have not liked what Macron was trying to do. My parents are retired, and all retirees are really mad at Macron because he's taking away some of their purchasing power and made reforms that they see as really being hurtful to them. So you have a whole generation who normally would not even think of voting far right, who are now so mad by this extremely arrogant young guy who just comes like a wrecking ball in their life, that they are thinking of voting far right. And these are people that would never in a million years have supported this type of ideology.
Yeah, but Cecile, is Le Pen
is
Le Pen, as you understand it, based on what you said, kind of more pro-traditional French social safety net for the pensioners and others than Macron with his reforms?
For the pensioners, yes. For the pensioners, and especially, I would say, the white pensioners, I think what she represents is a rejection of the, you know, the global liberal ideology of Macron that has gotten a bad rap. And of course, seeing this from our perspective here, we're like, well, what Macron is doing, that's great. You know, it's great for France. He's doing really good things. But for people inside the country, they're like, we don't care about what you think outside of France. We care about what's happening with our, you know, monthly
finances,
budget.
Personal finances. You know. Well, a lot on the line for France and the world in this Sunday's Le Pen-Macron runoff. Roger Cohen is the New York Times Paris bureau chief. Thank you for filling us in so thoroughly. We really appreciate it. Good talking to you, Roger.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.